Do you trust your friends? You probably do. That's why they're your friends. Trust is at the heart of all relationships, and when trust is broken, those relationships can be very difficult to put back together. Peter H. Kim, who teaches at the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business, has written a new book called How Trust Works: The Science of How Relationships Are Built, Broken, and Repaired. Peter is a leading authority in the field of trust repair, and his research has been published in the world's top scientific journals in management and psychology. Here he is to share five of his big ideas.
Hi, this is Peter H. Kim. I'm a professor of management and organization at the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business, and the author of the book, How Trust Works: The Science of How Relationships Are Built, Broken, and Repaired. You probably don't need me to tell you about the importance of trust or what it's like when trust is broken. Trust is essential for our relationships, careers, communities, and prospects for the future. But what we knew about trust was surprisingly limited when I became a social scientist. That's why I've devoted over 20 years of my career to investigating how trust develops, how it's violated, and how it's repaired. This research has uncovered a wide array of surprising and sometimes disturbing insights that I examine throughout my book. I'm going to share with you just five of those big ideas. The first insight is you are not as cynical as you think. One of our most common assumptions is that trust starts at zero and only builds gradually over time as we learn more about one another. It turns out that this is far from true. Evidence suggests that we exhibit surprisingly high levels of trust in those we don't know, and that we do so for a host of reasons. This discrepancy between how we think trust works and how we trust in real life is underscored whenever we dine at a new restaurant. Every time we do, we are trusting countless strangers who are involved in that meal. This includes farmers, wholesalers, distributors, cooks, and other restaurant staff we have never met. And that decision is also not without real danger. There are over 73,000 cases of potentially deadly E. coli infections each year that are transmitted through food, and that's a big deal. But we make these kinds of trusting decisions all the time. And the evidence makes clear that this willingness to trust those we don't know is actually a good thing. Rather than simply making us naive or gullible, this willingness to trust generally makes us better off by making us happier, by expanding our opportunities, and by ultimately making us more successful. Insight number two is consider the why. When trust is violated, we typically focus on whether the offender has apologized. And that kind of response can certainly matter. But it turns out that the effectiveness of apologies and other trust repair efforts often depends as much on how the offense is viewed than the response itself. Apologies, for example, can often elicit dramatically different reactions to an offender, as we can see with many public figures who have apologized for their sexual transgressions. This is because just as important as whether someone apologizes or not, are people's beliefs about why the violation occurred. It's the story that determines how that apology is ultimately received or rejected. The problem, though, is that we tend to overlook this essential part of the equation by simply assuming what those beliefs might be, much like trying to avoid traffic accidents by only looking straight ahead and ignoring the cross traffic. Insight number three, it's probably not that simple. One of the most important ways we make sense of trust violations is by deciding whether they stem from a lack of competence or integrity. Competence and integrity are the two most important bases of trust. And whether we view trust violations as a matter of competence or integrity can make an enormous difference in how the exact same attempt to repair trust is viewed. It's a big reason why we need to consider the why in addition to the response. But even when we do consider the why, we tend to do it far too simplistically, despite the fact that this choice can make an enormous difference in the trust we exhibit. We tend to make these decisions in a reflexive manner. We often fail to explore competing explanations for these incidents, or the possibility that there was more than one cause. And the decision is often based on what we are motivated to think than what really happened. These issues underscore how violators are not the only ones responsible for the repair of trust, their perceivers have a responsibility as well, to investigate what happened and why to the very best of their ability, so they can calibrate their trust more effectively. Insight number four is, your balance sheet is broken. The repair of trust is ultimately about guilt and redemption. These considerations are also at the core of some of our most timeless fictional and real-life stories. But despite the central role these judgments so often play, our assumptions about how that's done are often wrong. We tend to think this involves an approach not too different from how we manage a checking account, where our good deeds add to the account as credits, and our bad deeds subtract from the account as debits. So we can tally up each side of the ledger to gauge whether someone is good enough to be trusted again. But the evidence suggests that this process is easily distorted in ways that we fail to anticipate. There are times when even a single bad act can overwhelm a lifetime of good, and lead those who perceive these actions to reach very different conclusions than the actors themselves. This means that even when people try to maintain their moral standing by making sure their bad deeds are outweighed by the good, they may ultimately be surprised to discover that they are being considered unethical and untrustworthy after all. Insight number five is, good people can disagree about what integrity means. When others do things that run counter to our values, it's natural to infer that their integrity is low. And that kind of perception is particularly difficult to correct. We should note, however, that even though most of us tend to share the same moral principles, different people, groups, and cultures prioritize those principles differently, and can thus reach different conclusions about what's appropriate. Those differences can lead us to quickly condemn others' actions as irredeemably immoral, while they, in turn, believe that they are being unfairly maligned for acts they consider entirely justified, with the result being that trust becomes virtually impossible to repair. We can see this again and again in our increasingly polarized political discourse, where each side is focused on vilifying the other. But if these problems do stem from differences in how we prioritize the same moral principles, there's an opportunity to treat these different views as matters not of right versus wrong, but rather of right versus right, and turn what might have otherwise been an intractable conflict, in which each side condemns the integrity of the other, into the more tractable problem of how best to negotiate the different ethical priorities of well-meaning people. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoy the book.
Thank you, Peter. That was Peter H. Kim with five big ideas from How Trust Works, the science of how relationships are built, broken, and repaired. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.